Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
You sounded like you were having a little bit of slurring problem in there. Have you
That's
been drinking
accent.
Again?
That's called accent.
It's called accent.
Yes.
You've been.
It's a Dr. Pepper. Diet okay, Dr. Pepper well, causes good. Slurring,
anyway,
obviously.
You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and I probably left something out there. Were you listening to the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure, who are people who are peculiarly weird.
Well, that, even in that word, yes.
In that we like to listen to the sound of squalling cats dancing on snare drums.
Also known as bagpipes.
What's the difference?
We are both a radio program as well as an SEC registered investment advisory firm out of Salado, Texas.
Yeah, we're definitely out of Salado. We're in Temple.
And when we're not in a radio studio, we actually, for a living, give people advice on how to invest their money.
We actually manage their money for them. Isn't that disgusting?
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
So what we do on the weekends, on Saturdays, we come and we try to give pointers to people that are either curious or want to learn more about what we do. We tell them on the radio. We don't get paid for this program. We were just talking about that on the break. We don't get paid. We don't pay them to have the program. We're doing this as a public service.
Public circus.
And sometimes, like this morning, it's a little harder for us to justify to ourselves why we're doing this. As standing in the cold, they changed the code on the door in the studio, and they didn't tell us about it.
Yeah.
And so we're standing in the cold in the rain, waiting to come in. And I hope that you all are actually getting something good out of this,
because I hope so too.
We enjoy doing it. We enjoy sitting here and talking, but we do actually put some work into this.
Anyway, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's good morning.
Good morning.
I changed the subject a little bit back to Obamacare. Anyway, me and my buddies were having a bit of a discussion this week. I know you guys talk about it quite often, so I wanted to basically put a scenario to you to see if I understand this correctly. And let's say the scenario would be a young man, you know, a young man or woman, doesn't matter, 29 years old.
Right.
Entrepreneur, making pretty good money above the poverty level.
Mm-hmm.
Had a plan, got canceled because it didn't meet the law's requirement.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And now he's trying to figure out, you know, what to do.
Well, his cancellation has been uncanceled, but...
Well, in certain places.
Well,
in California, it's not uncanceled.
Well, it's not if you're in Texas... Even your hypothetical person is in Texas, his plan is now effectively uncanceled. By the way, it doesn't get canceled until next year, for starters. Okay. There's warning that they were going to cancel it at the end of the year.
Next year's only a month away.
Since we're making, but we're a little over a month, but we're making hypothetical situations here. So move forward with your, we don't want people to panic and think this happened.
Kind of got canceled in that insurance.
Right.
I mean, and that probably has happened in the cross country. And so now he's figuring out his finances, and he's trying to do the most economical thing for him.
Right. And so he's more than 250% of poverty.
Yeah. He's doing
so he's
well.
Making
He's making a pretty good living then, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. He's not going to get any subsidy.
Okay, so he's got that's actually a pretty good income. Okay.
Yeah, well, close to six figures, I believe it is.
Yeah. All right, okay. So let's say this person's making six figures, and he got notified that he needs to get some different health insurance.
Okay.
Now continue your scenario.
Here's the way I understand.
And where does this person live, by the way?
Pardon me?
Where does this person live?
Let's say he lives in Texas.
Okay.
Let's say he lives in Central Texas, okay?
Okay, yeah.
All right, because I'm very familiar with the facts around here. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So now let me just see if he could do this, if this individual and still be in compliance with the law.
Right.
Let's say he goes to the exchange or wherever, and his premiums have increased and this, that, and other. So it is going to cost him more.
Well, they might not have increased.
And that's true. You know, and we agreed with that one. It may go up or down. But, okay, now let's say he says that I'm going to go ahead and not get insurance
right.
and pay the penalty.
Right.
Okay.
Which which next year will be $95.
Right,
correct.
And they'll have to pay that
right.
in 2015
right.
after filing 2014 taxes.
Right.
And the only way the government can get that money from him in accordance with the ACA law is if the government actually owes him a refund.
Yes.
Otherwise, there is nothing in
that's
that
right.
law.
And it will accumulate over time.
Tarnish.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
There are penalties that build over time because it's being treated like a tax.
You're going someplace with this. Get to it, and so we can.
I'm sorry. Okay, so I decide not to pay. I'm not going to get on the.
You're not going to get health insurance. Right.
Mm-hmm. We'll pay the fine.
Right.
And this is what I'm going to tell my family, my wife. Okay, as soon as one of us gets a sickness,
right.
cancer, let's say, or an accident,
right.
all we have to do is. We're not insured, but we can get insured on the website when it works.
Actually,
and we will get covered. Let's
actually, that's not true.
Okay, that's a big sticking point. So that's what everybody's saying.
No, the point is, let's say you had an accident. Let's say you had an accident, and you're in the, and you wind up in the emergency room, and you go into intensive care, and this is pretty much the typical thing that happens. And you're in intensive care. The odds of your being able to file an application on your own to get health insurance while you're unconscious in intensive care are pretty slim.
On top of that, there's a...
Could my wife do it?
Nope. You got to do it.
That's true
and
whether you're both conscious or not.
And all that time, you're accumulating debt, and pretty soon you'll have a six-figure debt that you have to pay. And contrary to popular belief, that isn't going to go away. If you've got a six-figure income and you have assets, the hospital will come after you to get that because you chose to violate the law.
I didn't violate the law.
Yes,
did
you
I?
Did. Yes, you did.
Hold
you,
on.
Oh, because I mandated.
You chose to not, and it's a minor law, it's a civil law, but you chose not to get health insurance and accept the fine. Okay?
It's the same as the illegal alien. The part about illegal is kind of funny. They can't be put in prison for being an illegal immigrant. They can be put in a facility until they're deported, but it is not a prison facility, and they can't look like a prison facility. It can't feel like one. They've got to be treated like people.
That's one of the changes under the Obamacare that people have not paid a lot of attention to.
On top of that,
I didn't have an accident or whatever. I go to the doctor, all of a sudden, hey, you got cancer. You know, now I have time, okay.
And yeah, now you could sign up.
All I got to do is go to the website,
right.
And I haven't paid. I've only, accumulated maybe less than $1,000.
Yeah, you're right. Go ahead. Jake has something to say. Let him go ahead.
Yeah, there is one other factor. This year, this coming year, the fine is relatively low if you don't sign up.
Yeah, I saw it goes up to about $700 in 2016.
And it keeps going up after that until eventually you're paying as much in fines as you would in health care costs.
But that's down the road. But in the meantime, let's face it, Americans are smart.
No, they're not.
They get around the law.
Anybody who chooses not to get the health care, and by the way, as far as getting it and the website down and all that stuff, you can get the health care under Obamacare. It was advertised on this radio program last week. I don't know if we got one coming up now. You can go to Scott and White and say, I want to sign up for health care under the Affordable Care Act, and you get a choice of plans.
Let me come at this from a different direction, because we just did a very, very micro scenario, one where there is a very specific person that's 29 years old that is married and has a very large income and doesn't want to get on
right.
to...
wants to roll the dice.
Right. The reality here is very clear. You said it, and I'm going to repeat it. Americans are smart. A 29-year-old with a wife
and a couple of kids
that has a good income is going to get health insurance.
Yeah.
They're not the people that are the problem at this point. And let me go even further back. Let me step let's zoom out, if you will. We're scrolling our mouse button so that we are zooming out from the map, and we're looking at the United States as a whole. We're looking down at all these people that have or do not have insurance. And this is one of the keys here. Before Obamacare happened, and please don't think that I'm a great, huge fan of Obamacare, Before Obamacare happened, we had a very broken system. People tend to forget that because Obamacare has some things that are wrong with it. It's really easy to say, why did we break a completely perfect system? Before Obamacare, there was nothing that said you had to get insurance ever. And the problem was in places where people were between the income requirements for Medicaid and the ability to have a really good job where the employer was paying for some of it. So these people would go and they'd get sick. Shame on them. They'd show up at the emergency room. We as a country had laws set up all over the country saying if somebody is in an emergency, they must be treated. They come in, they get treated, they leave. The hospital, even not-for-profit enterprises, have to pay their employees. A doctor has a lot of bills. Nurses had to go to school. They have salaries that are due to them. You have to pay for the equipment. You have to pay for the medicines. You have to pay for the bandages. All of this stuff has to come from somewhere, and the government isn't going to say, here, have some money. For people that aren't paying because they don't have insurance, the hospital would turn around and charge the people that did pay and did have insurance for those other people. That is socialism. It was non-governmental socialism because the government was giving requirements, and the reality is most doctors wouldn't want to turn away people anyway. The system was broken in that the insurance rates were going up for people that had insurance, which was meaning those same smart people you were talking about a minute ago, if they're healthy, they said, well, the insurance rates just went up. We're healthy. We haven't been using it. Why should we keep our insurance if the insurance rates are going up? It's going up astronomically.
Yeah.
Let's cancel our plan. So they canceled their plan. And what that did is it took a healthy family out of the insurance pool, which means that the people that had insurance, their rates went up. And that was a cycle that was continuing.
And then the other side of it is,
I think Obamacare is actually going to do what you just said. I don't know.
It's going to do what?
See what happens.
Well, no, the issue.
More and more, it's going to actually compound less people in the pool. Healthy young people or whoever have to make this work.
No, wait a minute. Hang on.
I think the ACA is actually going to.
You think that, but why do you. Wait a minute. Why do you think that?
Because.
Why do you think people
are
going to?
No. Premiums and the deductible. Well, that's what, you know, you kind of, if you go out there, you can find that.
No, listen to me just a second. Yeah. Hang on. Wait. Stop a second and listen, okay? Yeah. If you had a health insurance policy that fundamentally wouldn't cover much of anything and it was cheap, and believe me, that's the way the cheap policies were. If you got sick and you had a significant quantity, they would find some reason not to pay it. That's what was going on across the country. If you had a cheap health insurance policy that was way below market norms, odds are it wasn't going to cover anything anyway of any significance.
And I understand that. That's what the law tries to
do. And the point is that we see health insurance premiums in our business. We understand them. We know they've gone from $300 a family to about four times that much.
In a decade.
And we can't afford to keep doing this forever. And once Obamacare was passed, they leveled off.
Yeah, this is a key. And this we're going to come at this really easily.
Jeff, that's not really out there in the media right now.
No, it's not.
Yeah. What they're talking about right now in the media, it's really easy. That's why I went to a macro position. What the stories are going to be about are the people that go to the exchange and they find their rates went up. You're not going to have a lot of stories about the people that went to the exchanges and the rates went down, because bad news sells papers. So we're not defending the law as such, because there are so many things wrong with the law that need to be fixed. It's absurd. But if you look at Here's a great example. When over the past 3 years, our insurance premiums leveled off. They were increasing at a pretty close to exponential rate at the office. When we have a fairly healthy group of people working at the office, our rates were increasing and increasing and increasing, and then 3 years ago, they stopped increasing. Why? Well, because 3 years ago, the first portions of the Affordable Care Act came into law, one of which was that if you're between the ages of 18 and 25, you can be covered on your parents' insurance plan. That lowered the rate of increase drastically because a huge chunk of healthy people suddenly got included in the insurance pool. Their parents are happy to pay for that because they don't want their college-age kids to be in a situation where they're going to show up at their door in a year and say, hey, I've got $100,000 of bills to the hospital that you need to pay because I broke my leg at spring break. You know, that's the sort of thing parents are thinking about that. So there's millions of people that are in the insurance pool that weren't before. It's really easy right now when the exchanges are broken and when there are people coming in and saying exactly what you're saying about the fines are coming up this year, all of that. It's easy to focus on the bad parts. And please don't get me wrong. There are a lot of bad parts. There are some things that have to be fixed. But if you don't look at it in the macro sense and realize that it has already had a benefit, then it's not a balanced position. And
let's be specific with real people here. We have clients in our office that we talk to and we see deep into their lives. And what I have seen in the last year is people who, a couple, for example, who are working for corporations, who are in their 50s, who have enough money, they could live, admittedly not like kings, but they could live for the rest of their lives on the 401k money they have developed over the years, or the other money they have invested over the years. They would like, maybe at 59, maybe at 55, because some 401ks allow withdrawals at 55, they'd like to retire. But they can't get health insurance. You have somebody who's 55, 59, a couple, maybe they're a little overweight, maybe they have a little health problem in their past or something like that. Why do they have to stay working for the corporation until they're 65? Because they got to wait on Medicare to get health insurance. In other words, what you're doing is sentencing people who otherwise don't need to be working, who would love to leave the corporate wage slave environment, who can afford to do so because they're willing to lower their standard of living a little bit. And you're saying you got to work an extra 5 years, maybe 10 years, whether you want to or not, because our health insurance system is broken. And what they're able to do in 2014 is stop working. Or if they get laid off. And another case where there was a couple. Now, wait a minute. I'm talking and you're interrupting. So just hang on a minute. There was a couple that I know personally who has a daughter who has a long-term serious ailment. The man was in desperate straits for a while because he got laid off from his job. He found another one really quickly that he hated, that kept him away from home. I mean, he hated that job. He got it so he could get his daughter on health insurance. They make too much money and have too much money to get on the children thing. And the bottom line to it was very, very simple. Beginning in 2014, he is no longer enslaved to his job. And for all the other warts and pimples, folks, freeing people from economic slavery is, I think, they got to make a choice. Either be miserable and kill yourself working at a job you hate or watch your daughter die.
And there's a one last thing here, and I think it's fairly important. I've been taking a ongoing poll of the people that call up or that are concerned about the effects of Obamacare. And so I'm going to ask you, caller, I'll try it as a soothsayer. How's that? It's really easy in this area of the country to say that most people that are male have had some kind of contact with the military, at which point they're aware that they have health insurance provided for them under, it's a very large HMO, TRICARE. And then at retirement, they have that to meet between whatever that supplemental form of TRICARE is, to meet between the VA and what's existing in their TRICARE, and then they get to Medicare. That is a system that is truly socialized from one end to the other. And in those areas, costs for medicine, costs for treatment have been going up drastically. But it's not being handed off to the patient. Those costs are going up, in some cases, exponentially. And I'm going to refrain from asking the caller.
You're going somewhere with this.
Yes, I am. There are areas of our medical care that the opposite is true, that costs and care quality has been going up and costs have been going down. And those are areas where the patient is able to shop around for services, where they're able to say, I would like to choose my doctor and choose the treatment. When there is a barrier between we as Americans, we who are pretty good at consumers and finding good prices for good things, if there's a barrier between us and that, and anybody that's ever looked at their insurance statement and then tried to compare it to the statement that they got from a medical treatment facility and try to figure out what was covered by where and who and what and what do I owe, where I'm going with this is the insurance law is still broken. There are still things that need to be fixed. If we concentrate so hard on the idea of this whole law is wrong, we're going to miss the good parts. We're going to miss the fact that, and it's become a political thing, that this whole concept came from a Republican, and then another Republican, and then it went to Democrats. There are good parts in all of this. There are bad parts in all of this. We have to fix the bad parts.
You know, caller, could I ask you a question? Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you have health insurance?
I'm retired military. It doesn't.
So you have socialized health insurance?
Pardon me?
You have a socialized health insurance program, a single-payer program.
I'm retired from the military.
And it's funny, the vast majority of the people who I hear complaining about Obamacare, which is basically a free market system, you're just required to be part of the market, are on socialized single-payer government systems.
Well, and it's not affecting me, but my children, you know, that's the big debate. My buddy said, well, what are you worried about? This? I go, well, my kids and grandkids, I kind of want to know what's going on in the country.
I'd kind of like them to have health insurance, too. I appreciate your call.
Okay.
We
have commercials.
But you know, you and I really appreciate the fact that you're calling. And I think and make a note of what we said. It's going to get better.
It's still got a lot of problems that need to be fixed, but it will get better.
And I could be wrong and come back and say I'm wrong.
Yeah.
If 5 years from now it doesn't get better. Okay.
One of the things that we truly enjoy are people that call in here and give heartfelt opinions about what they think is going on.
Mm-hmm.
What's important, though, is to take a moment and remove the emotion from it, remove the panic, and look at the underlying issues, the underlying economics of the issue. Because if it were a choice between the Affordable Care Act and another law like the one that President Reagan introduced, for instance, that didn't get passed because the Democrats didn't like it, and this is going to put me in a weird place, I prefer the Affordable Care Act. There was more wrong with the law that Reagan proposed. That's part of the reason why it didn't go forward. I think there is enough wrong with the Affordable Care Act that if there had been a slightly larger number of Republicans in the House, it wouldn't have passed. But we have it, and the reality is that it's unlikely to be repealed. It is at a point where if it is repealed, we would be in a worse place than we are now, and certainly a worse place than we were before the law was passed. So we need to get to reality and say, how do we make it work? How do we do this right? There's so much argument about whether or not the law is right or wrong that we're missing a fact that that is a black and white area, and we're dealing with a gray subject. Anyway, you said you had some things to do, or commercials to play or something.
Okay, well, thank you for the call. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake.
McClure. We're going to play for some commercials, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
Hi, I'm John Hernan with the Best Little Floor House in Texas. At the Best Little Floor House, over 90% of...
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And that comes up, and it's very appropriate. Jeff here is old enough that I can remember 50 years and a day ago very, 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 very clearly. And yesterday, man, I'm feeling the emotion now. The murder of the President of the United States happened. And I want to say something about that, if I could editorialize just a
Please
moment
do.
Here. I was in the ninth grade, and I remember the announcement coming over the PA system at lunch in our school that the President of the United States had just been shot and may be dead. It was officially at 1 o'clock they declared him dead, but it was probably around 12:30 or so when the announcement came over. And I remember, and I was in Arlington, Texas, Ferguson Junior High School. It's amazing I remember these things. Very powerful right-wing Republican enclave of people, upper middle class people. And I remember students dancing on the tables, and a cheer went up through the room when they realized the President of the United States had been shot. Now, that's shocking, and we don't hear much reporting on that today. We don't like to admit that such things happen. But the fact is, ninth graders don't have the buffers to realize it's inappropriate to reflect the opinions that they heard from their parents and that they, as a result, believed. The hatred for John F. Kennedy by conservatives and Republicans at that time was at least as profound as the hatred I hear today. And there's two reasons I wanted to bring that up. One, it was there. Two, put it in perspective. It's no worse today than it was back then.
And no better.
Right, and it's unfortunate that we get the feeling that way. We get so anti, so negative, so against anybody who's different from us that we sometimes compound it out and we justify our emotions. And that's something that we need to watch out for. I suspect were the President of the United States to be assassinated today, there would be ninth graders dancing on the table again.
Yeah.
And that is a horrible, horrible way to run a country. My friends, by the way, who are right-wing Republicans who have complained very, very strongly and profoundly about the Senate going to the 51-vote confirmation rule, my suggestion to them is develop a platform that will get 51 votes in the Senate.
Yeah.
And my second recommendation with regard to Obamacare is show us what you would replace it with, and you might be able to get some support for replacing it.
Yeah, a major thing is different between then and now. The political structure of the United States was very much north-south back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much now...
It's still very much north-south.
Well, it's middle United States versus East Coast and West Coast.
Uh-huh.
So the demographics have shifted. Things have changed there. But I do think you're right. I think that people dancing on the tables would happen if we had the same situation here. And this is we just talked about this a minute ago, or talking about the filibuster, or talking about the market conditions, I mean, a minute ago, the last hour. I find this to be a true statement. One of the largest or hardest insults that the Republicans give is non-patriotic. And I know a lot of Democrats get upset about that because they love the country. Sometimes it's true. Sometimes it is a non-patriotic, an unpatriotic, anti-American thing that is being said by the Democrats. I'm going to give a scenario here that I can't define as anything but unpatriotic that the Republicans have done recently. When Rick Perry was making a statement about secession, and I'm driving along the road and I see bumper stickers that say secede, I love Texas. Texas is really in my blood. I love the attitude that the people have here. I love the way we do business. I love our fiscal concepts. I love how we treat each other. There's just an amazing welcoming atmosphere in Texas that you don't find in almost any other state. But how can you see it as, I mean, how can you see it as anything but unpatriotic to say secede from...
Basically dump the Constitution.
Right. I think the Constitution is the foundation for the success that Texas has.
Well, you know, actually to secede would be to declare war upon the United States of America.
Right. So it is as fully unpatriotic as you can get, and it's generally by the people who just a few years before were pointing at the filibusters in Senate that were being done by the Democrats rather than the Republicans.
But we are lowering our popularity.
Oh, I realize that. But I'm trying to bring this to a point, and the point is exactly what I was saying a moment ago. The more we polarize, the more we say everything is black or white with nothing in the middle, the less the reality of the majority of people in the United States, the majority of people are in the middle. The vast majority of Republicans are not right-wingers. The vast majority of Democrats are not left-wingers. The vast majority of those two parties agree with each other on 95% of political issues. As long as we have the polarization where the media is jumping from one extreme to the other, all we hear about are the extremes. All we hear about is the conflict. The reality is in the middle. If we don't come to the middle and talk to each other, we're not going to be able to solve Obamacare. We're not going to be able to solve the tax code. These are real problems. These are things where consistently, year after year after year, major news organizations take a semi-complicated but not extremely complicated tax return to five different well-renowned organizations to do their taxes and get different results from every organization every year.
Which means that, in effect, when the IRS comes and looks at it, most of us are lawbreakers.
Right, exactly. We've got to get that fixed, and we're not going to get it fixed with the concept of secede. Okay, I'm taking my toys and going home. We're not going to get it fixed by saying repeal that whole thing with nothing to replace it with. The only way we can fix this is to find some middle ground. And I don't mean give up your principles. I mean find the facts in here that we all agree on. Because we agree on some things. The laws existed already. We don't want to turn people away from hospitals that are injured because they can't pay. We got to figure that out. I mean, how would you like to be the guy in the accident that didn't have your insurance card with you, that you're unconscious, you can't tell them that you have insurance? Oh, he can't pay. We've agreed. None of us want to be in that position. So let's figure out how to make it work. Those are things we can all agree on. Mm-hmm. Find those things because they are the fundamental aspect of who we are as Americans. Let's stop this nasty extremism of saying there's a principle involved that is so extreme that it can't encompass the good parts that we find in the middle.
If I could change the subject here just a little bit.
Please do.
By the way, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number is in here if you want to join this conversation. In the Killeen Temple area, wherever it's locally called, the area code 254-773-1400. Or
you can reach us toll-free at 1-866-597-1400.
There's an experiment going on in the world on a large scale that despite our apparent dysfunction, we're doing better in than anyone else is.
Yes. Having just said that we're a dysfunctional, right. Nasty mess, kind of let's say here is how good we are,
yeah.
Too.
In Europe, the experiment is we had a near depression occur. We were on the brink of an actual financial meltdown that would have shut down the economic system of the world and resulted almost certainly.
Can we use cusp? I just like that word, cusp. We were on the cusp.
We were on the cusp?
Yeah, I like that word. Okay, go ahead.
All right. We were on the cusp. That's an interesting term. And there aren't, I have not found any economists, by the way, anyone who studies this, anyone who makes any sense or logic whatsoever, who concluded that had TARP not been used vigorously, had the Federal Reserve not intervened vigorously, had all these things not occurred, we would not be in a depression. And I'm talking about a depression with 30% unemployment, maybe more, and probably by this time coasting into World War III. They two go together. So what we had is an experiment in how to deal with this. And it's really, from my perspective as an economist, fascinating to see the results. Europe right now is staggering forward. Now, probably crawling is probably better. Their GDP year over year, gross domestic product for the Eurozone, is up 0.01%. That's within the margin of error. The southern countries, which, by the way, roughly equate in many ways to the southern states in the United States in so many ways,
right,
have 20 and 30% unemployment, and it's not getting any better. The northern states in the European Union are suddenly facing the reality, and they announced this last week, of deflation and a falling gross domestic product and falling employment. This is 5 years after the event that created this, the triggering event. Now, it was there all along. And what has Europe tried? They've tried austerity. Cut the budget. Make people pay off their debts. Let's be disciplined about this. Let's not run up a bunch of debt. Limit your deficits. Pay down your national debt. This is the call that comes from... Now, folks, listen when I tell you, this is the Europe that is saying this, not somewhere in the communist world or something like this. This is Europe that's saying this, okay? And on the other end of the spectrum, we have China.
Mm-hmm.
China flooded their economy with money. China's government started spending money like there was no tomorrow. And many, we've talked about this before, they built entire major cities. By the way, they're called ghost cities. It's translated from Chinese. Nobody...
Ghost towns.
Live there. It's not a ghost town.
It's a ghost city.
It's a
huge
city that would hold millions of people, except that, and I mean this literally, nobody lives there.
As a percentage of their economy, what they spent in stimulus was more than 10 times what we did in all of the stimulus packages that we did put together.
And in the United States, we've tried to muddle through on a middle road, and...
seems to work.
We have fought over it. We have yelled at each other. But the fascinating thing is we are recovering. We were the people the rest of the world turned to.
We dragged them out of it.
For emergency relief, we gave it to them. And we have then been proceeding forward since then. Admittedly, our GDP last quarter was technically 2.8. It's probably going to come down to 2.5. Fourth quarter may or may not even be positive, and there's a very good reason for that. We are cutting back on our government spending rather dramatically. By the way, to tie this in, for those of you who think there's a couple of issues here. Number one, we mentioned earlier the latest consumer price index, and several people said, well, I don't trust that. I don't trust the government. Well, folks, all the private indexes are saying the same thing. We're seeing prices fall. That's dangerous. But the second issue in this last employment report, we're finally getting the details out. There's only one place where employment in the United States where employment fell significantly.
Yes.
Which is why we went from we went up for a tenth of a percent on unemployment. And that is the District of Columbia. The government is laying off people. Now, admittedly, we had the government shut down in the middle of that, but that really didn't have a big effect on it.
No, because they got paid anyway.
The government is laying people off. The government is shrinking. It is, according to the better economists in the country right now, the shrinkage in the government is taking 1 to 1.5% per year out of our gross domestic product right now.
I said this last hour. I said I expect our GDP to increase drastically over the coming year because there's only so much more cutting that will be reasonable in the government, which is what's causing the GDP to be coming down so fast.
Well, you say it's reasonable, but I'm going to tell you, unless we can move to change sequester, do you realize that next year it kicks into full force? And when it kicks into full force next year, it may not be reasonable to cut services, but the government's going to be cutting some serious services.
October 1st is when it kicked in.
It kicked in, but the actual effect is in the calendar year. And very frankly, come January, unless somebody does something about sequester, you're going to see further government cutbacks.
I expect that our GDP is going to improve in the middle of this, despite it at first.
Oh, yeah.
And this is something interesting. We had absolute record tax revenue to the United States government this year. Taxes didn't go up drastically anywhere. We didn't have a massive set of new things coming in because that happens in the coming year. You know, the Obamacare increase in taxes on capital gains and everything else happens for the year we're in now. The revenues that we got this year to the government came from last year. There wasn't any drastic change in the laws last year, and we had absolute record amount of revenue. Because the private sector, the side of the sector that is growing drastically, and that's where most of the tax revenue comes from.
Let me talk about something about taxes a second.
Uh-huh.
In the late 1990s, I was actually making more money than I'm making today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I kept my own books. And the way I figured it up is I took my business expenses.
Yeah.
All my identifiable, and I realize there's all kinds of depreciations and all kinds of things that I didn't deal with here. I took all my business expenses out of my gross income.
Uh-huh.
Simple methodology. And I don't mean, by the way, in business expenses, the fancy stuff like depreciation. Just the stuff which I actually wrote checks for.
Right.
And the way I would estimate my taxes was to take 30% and send it to the government. And I did that for a very strange reason. It came out close to that. But there's a really fascinating thing. In the Bible, a lot of people think there's only one tithe.
There's actually three.
Right. So you basically took 30% of what you made and sent it to the government.
The government at the time was a religious government.
Yeah,
but hey, that's what
right.
it was.
And, well, it was religious and local.
Uh-huh.
So I would take 30% and I'd send it to the federal government. And I just sit down and figured my taxes for this year so far and annualized them. My personal income taxes.
30%.
28.56.
It's pretty close to 30%.
And, you know, with all of the tax law changes and everything that's gone on, and I've been at this now for a long time.
See, you're just now spending more money on the filing of the taxes than you were back then.
Well, it's a lot more complex now.
Yeah, it's a lot more complex.
But the fascinating thing with all of these tax changes, the percentage of money that I'm sending to the federal government has not moved more than 1.5% because I went back and looked in all the previous years, too. It's hovered about within 1.5% of the same percentage of my income with all these amazing changes. Talking about much ado about nothing.
Well, let me say this, though. In the process.
By the way, if you know anything about money and income, now I realize how much money I make. That's all.
Yes. So, in the process, now we have a lot more employees than we used to have. So we have the ability, we get to write off their pay, but they pay taxes in the middle of that. So if you look at...
That's getting a little too complicated.
Yeah, if you look at the reason why tax revenue is up is because while we're making about the same, take-homes about the same, our increased expenses have actually led to more growth in the economy. We've got more people that are being paid that are also paying taxes to the economy. So
the gross amount of money that we get into the business have grown rather dramatically over the years, which is one of the reasons that I have a lot of trouble believing everything is going downhill.
Right. And when we look at business across the board, we're in Texas. Obviously, we've got our blinders on. We're saying, look around Texas. But Texas has been doing really, really well. The rest of the economy is improving as well. We talked about across the nation, residential real estate prices are up 15% this year.
You know, and we had a call from Rick a little earlier, and he wanted me to talk about Salado as an economic entity. And maybe, I think he was trying to get...
We also wanted to talk about deflation in the middle of this, too. So.
Well, I talked about deflation a little bit, but yeah, we want to talk about it some more, but we're right out of time. We definitely, deflation is the threat right now. But I just wanted to mention something in passing. For people who don't believe things are getting better, go to Salado and look at the fact we have a Brookshire Brothers store. We have a supermarket in Salado.
Yeah.
We have a full-blown hardware store in Salado. And again, it's a tiny microcosm of what's going on everywhere else, but things are getting better. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but for long-term investors, there's the critical element. If things are getting better, then being a long-term investor is a good idea. If things are getting worse, it's a bad idea. Things are getting better. We're going to break for commercials. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. We'll be back on the other side with just a few more minutes of our prattling on about this and that. And we're back with just another couple, 3 minutes of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I wanted to interject something here. Next week is Thanksgiving week.
It is. I'm very thankful for that.
And I want to express our thankfulness for everything, for and just my personal Thanksgiving. We live in the best country at the best time in the history of the world. We won the lottery. If you're listening to this, you're in the United States of America, you won the lottery. You have, your opportunities are unlimited. Your freedoms are greater than probably anyone else on the planet. Your rights are greater than anyone else on the planet. But above all, I want to give thanks. There's a lot of other things, my family and so on. But since this is a commercial activity and this is a professional voice that I'm using, I want to specifically give thanks for the staff we have at the Personal Wealth Coach.
I
am absolutely floored.
They're fantastic.
At the quality of commitment, the quality of caring for our clients. And I just want to publicly say, if you ever get a chance to meet any of those people who work in our office, they go beyond, above and beyond the call of duty so often, so much. It is just awe-inspiring to me, and I've been watching this a long time.
I do a lot of reading of scientific studies, papers, particularly psychologically based, and defining happiness is something psychologists have been trying to get for a long time. One of the underlying pieces that is fundamental to being happy, and which is why, if you recall, our Declaration of Independence is pretty clear on that, the pursuit of happiness being one of the major inalienable rights of humanity. Happiness is being grateful for what you have. And we have a caller, which we have very short period of time.
So, caller, say what you got to say quickly. You're on the air.
Okay. I want to encourage y'all to keep getting out in the weather and coming in and doing your program. And I thought of you when I was watching the John Kennedy Memorial in Dallas yesterday, and I heard the bagpipes.
Wow.
And have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
God bless you, and my same wishes not only to you but to everyone out there. I want you to have a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving. Be careful out there. They're trying to kill you.
Yeah, thankful for our listeners as well.
We're
just about out of time. If you'd like to contact us off the air, locally, voicemail is 947-1111. Toll-free is 1-800-914-PLAN. You can reach our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. You can email us there, Jake or Jeff at tpwc.com. Until next week.
KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.